From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. David France's new HBO documentary, Welcome to Chechnya, is a gut-wrenching look at the ongoing campaign to eradicate gay people in Chechnya. France worked on the ground with activists to chronicle the extraction of individuals fleeing the brutal autocracy. To share this footage without putting his subjects in danger, France worked with a team to swap out their faces digitally.
We wanted to make sure in this that we made a little bit of a tell on each one of those faces so that that you would know that they were actually wearing somebody else's face.
We'll also talk about how France protected himself, getting into Russia on a tourist visa, filming on iPhones and GoPros, even finding a fake Russian girlfriend. But first on the news banter, labor peace comes at a high cost. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So it seems, you know, there was this fight going on, and it's still going on between the Writers Guild and the agencies, and all the writers fired their agents, and the writers seem to be very fired up, and a lot of people thought we were going to see another writers' strike. But, you know, pandemics change everything, and it seems, as we speak, tentative deal has been reached at the 11th hour. The Writers Guild likes to bargain until the last minute. I mean, it's this negotiation via, you know, Zoom, I guess, or whatever they use, but they seem to have reached a deal. And it just shows that, you know, you can't fight anything really that well during the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, from the details that have leaked out, and this is not an official deal yet, by the time this airs, it might be. But what we're hearing is that the writers got gains in line with the Directors Guild, which negotiated previously, which included 3% gains, some additional monies put into pensions, and some, you know, fairly typical benefits. A lot of those issues that we thought would form the basis of a potential strike this summer have now been punted. And you got to think this is a victory for the studios and the streamers because, you know, this was something even 6 months ago we were talking about this being a crisis that the studios would really have to address and address it in a meaningful way. And because of all the other problems going on, I'm not saying that the studios are in a great position right now.
I was going to say it's a victory. If they could have go back and have the fight and then be able to be in production, they would take that deal, but go on.
Sure. But that's the world we're living in now. And at least they're not having to also deal with labor problems.
Yeah. So, these guys are still, of course, we keep reading about deals. They just held apparently a very successful sort of virtual Cannes film market. And people were pleased by the way it worked out. A couple of the agencies helped to organize that. And that's fine. But a lot of these things are deals for movies that haven't been made yet. You know, it's not funny at all, but it's like, I keep reading these things and thinking, and when is that going to happen? We can't get theaters open. We're seeing a little bit of tentative production start, but there's so many obstacles. It's a mess. But as you say, there will be no labor issues. Now, meanwhile, the Academy has pledged to achieve a greater diversity. They probably need some money too, but they certainly expanded their membership. They invited a whole bunch of new people in, including agents. I know there's a certain amount of blowback that I see just, you know, on social media, like, how is it a good thing to have agents in here? Because aren't they just going to vote for their clients? I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, I know I've heard of agents dealing with clients that they would never vote for because they don't like them. But
And publicists are allowed into the Academy. So, you know, publicists have the same problem. Managers also have clients. So the agents really were singled out here. And I think there's a long-standing bias against agents that goes back 50, 70, 80 years that they just can't be trusted. And the Academy, for whatever reason, decided that that is no longer going to be the case.
I mean, just going back to the publicist stuff for a sec, I will say, you know, you're a terrible person when your agent or your publicist is willing to not support you and secretly fill out that ballot. But I'm sure that will happen because I know I've had sources who were agents and publicists who have just had enough of certain kinds of behavior. But this is a group of, I noticed you tweeted, I thought it was funny that Kevin Ulrich, who basically is a hedge fund guy who invested in MGM, he is the chairman of the MGM board. but you know, he's not exactly a, he's a guy who's seen as a guy who likes to be on the red carpet, but not a, he's a money guy, but hey, he gets to vote. He can vote for the next Bond movie.
Yeah. And you know that, you know, to be invited into the Academy, you have to be recommended by current members. And you know that the people who work for this guy all said, oh, yeah, we'll recommend you. We'll get you into the Academy. And lo and behold, he's there amongst the 800 odd new people that they put in. Now, the thing we should be talking about that is, you know, these are all little kind of sideshows, is the big thing about the Academy is they met their goal for diversity. They set a very ambitious goal a few years ago to double the number of women and people of color in the Academy by 2020. And they did hit those goals. Now, the Academy was so white and so male that it still means that the Academy is currently, even with all these changes, more than 80% white and predominantly male. But they did meet these goals. And a lot of people, I think, were skeptical when this initiative was announced. And I think the Academy does deserve credit for seeing it through and at least trying to diversify this body.
Yeah, it's something that is made difficult by the fact that the studios and other companies and agencies have not been successful. So, they do point out, we at the Hollywood Reporter just did a story where we were talking about, not about diversity, but relationships with the police, which is another very, very front of mind issue right now. And none of the studios want to comment on that. You know, they won't address these things. And this is the kind of stuck situation that people are now trying to unstick. And I can just sense how difficult that's going to be, but we have to hope that it succeeds.
Well, one of the things the Academy has done in this effort is they have gone outside of the U.S. I mean, if you look at the invites this year, I mean, you got virtually the entire cast of Parasite was invited. You had Yalitza Aparicio, who is the star of Roma 2 years ago, and she's not a traditional actor, but she was invited to join the Academy. And you know, you see more and more the Academy is looking to these overseas talents in an attempt to diversify not just people of color and women, but nationalities as well.
Yes, yeah, so kudos for the effort. We hope that that spreads to other entities in this community and around the country. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. David France's new documentary, Welcome to Chechnya, is a harrowing look at the deadly purges of LGBTQ people in the Chechen Republic. The film follows a network of activists as they work to extract or rescue those who must flee for their lives. The subjects have escaped torture and brushes with death at the hands of the government, vigilantes, even their own families. One of those activists is David Esteve, who is seen early in the film making telephone contact with a closeted lesbian who's being threatened by her uncle.
Скажи, пожалуйста, насколько критична ситуация?
Дело в том, что мой дядя узнал про мою ориентацию вот недавно. Он в любом случае меня убьет.
Later, Esteve and his team help her flee Chechnya, an especially risky maneuver as her father worked for the government. Welcome to Chechnya is France's third documentary. He also directed How to Survive a Plague about the AIDS epidemic, as well as a film about trans activist Marsha P. Johnson. And he's already at work on his next project, though his lips are mostly sealed. So you are working on a documentary right now. You're in your apartment in the East Village, and you're working on a documentary about COVID. And I know you don't want to talk about it much, but you are actively shooting a documentary at this time.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And you're not going to tell me how or what?
not yet. We have figured out certain methods that it'll be fun to tell you about when we're ready.
Right. It will be the sequel. Well, so even that is relatively tame to the film that you are going to talk about now, it seems. Let me just start by saying this idea, I understand, was inspired by an article by Masha Gessen in The New Yorker about what was happening in Chechnya in terms of persecution and murder or torture of gay people. This terrible, honestly, you know, Nazi-like assault on gay people in Chechnya. So you hear that, you read this article and you think, I would like to make a film about that. And what is the next step?
The first step was to call up Masha Gessen and say, like, incredible, why doesn't anybody know about this? And is this a story that could be told as a documentary? And if so, would you join me? So she signed on and introduced me to the people who were operating the hidden shelter system where she had just returned from on a reporting trip, and set the ball in motion. I was there and recording within literally a few days.
Let me just note, I think she is now they. I recently, right, non-binary, I think. So I'm...
She's an old friend. I don't know. Let me just text her.
We'll wait for your text to come back, but we'll proceed. You're flying to Russia. I assume you flew to Moscow.
Correct.
And you're on what is clearly a dangerous mission. I mean, it's not entirely clear to me. Like, obviously, Chechnya is extremely dangerous, but Moscow is not safe, right?
Moscow is not safe. It's not safe to be queer anywhere in that country. There are vigilante groups that are inspired by this rightward leaning on the part of the Kremlin toward so-called family values and in leaning into the culture wars there in new and more powerful ways. So, Masha gave me advice. Do not agree to meet with anybody unless you are introduced by somebody you know.
In terms of the financing, do you have money ready to go? Do you have money in your savings account? I mean, how do you say, I'm going to now buy this ticket to Moscow and figure out where I'm staying and how I'm eating meals and how I'm filming?
So we deficit spent for some time before we could start even asking people for money, because we were filming in such secrecy, because we knew what we were putting on our drives was could reveal locations, could reveal identities, could blow this whole thing open in a way that could be very, very, very dangerous. So we didn't go to the typical funding sources for social justice documentaries like this. We really laid very, very low.
So meanwhile, you texted Masha Gessen earlier in the conversation. Did she or they respond to you?
They did right back. And it turns out that they have made a gender pronoun declaration just 48 hours ago. So I'm behind the curve, and I apologize. And they were my central producing partner as we began the work on this film. So I should have been more up to speed.
Okay. Well, let me move on to the, I don't know, had you been to Russia before?
I had not been to Russia before, no.
I mean, from what I know, this is the most dangerous thing in terms of like actual physical danger of somebody trying to beat or kill you that you've done. I mean, you must have thought about that going in.
As a documentary filmmaker, you know, I come from print, and I've done my stints as a war correspondent, and I've done hotspot reporting over the years. But this is the first time to go in with a real dedication to a single story and just embed myself in this network of activists and survivors, but also embed myself in the perils that they knew were like right outside the door. I was in the shelter system with our producer, Oskol Kurov, who is a well-known dissident filmmaker in Russia. And he came and joined me and operated the camera for us and was able to, you know, every moment that that there was a moment, was able to tell me what was transpiring around me. But there were times when I was just totally in the dark, as I could see people panicking around me, just not knowing what the trigger was and whether
scary.
Or not we would just, you know, like flee like instantly. So it was pretty scary.
You had a sort of a cover story, right? Like that you have a girlfriend, even though you don't actually have girlfriends.
I did at first, my first couple of trips, I met a nice a lady friend in Moscow who was very amenable to my proposal that we date in air quotes. And and she said, well, she actually has another boyfriend, a real boyfriend, who also travels in from another country. So I'll just be her other boyfriend who travels in.
Oh my God, she was two-timing with you.
She was two-timing. But that was, uh-huh. it worked for me. And,
I mean, I, as I understand it from other people who've gone into Russia, they are followed Did you feel that you were followed?
We were just under the assumption that we were being followed, yeah. I didn't have any evidence of it. And we also believe that at least the Russian authorities already knew where these safe houses were. The idea that we would be revealing something about locations was something we really, really, really didn't want to do. But we felt like the Russian authorities already knew these things, if not the Chechen authorities.
I mean, it seemed like from the film, there have been instances of Chechens showing up in Russia to reclaim, grab back relatives who had tried to flee.
It's true. And they used the security forces to do it. So, yeah, they wouldn't be dissuaded just by, you know, somebody from Moscow saying, you know, leave these houses alone for the time being. This is a dedicated campaign of liquidation. And, you know, I met people who were in the safe house system who were kidnapped while taking garbage outdoors. One man who opened the door and was just stabbed, you know, and left for dead on the floor of the safe house. No, there was no forgiving the LGBTQ people who were fleeing in any way. And that's why they will never, ever really be able to settle in anywhere and feel confident that their lives are secure and on a new path.
You know, it's crazy that they're going to chase these people into a whole other part of the world and not just let them live their lives not in Chechnya. But there's obviously a contagion of hate that is not to be, you know.
It is. And, it, you know, and they've inoculated, you know, the entire population with this hate. So your family, if it's known that you have, you know, one of these queer Chechens in your family, it impacts your entire family line. And these are vast kind of clan-based families. It means it's more difficult for your other children to get married. It's more difficult for people to get jobs in the clan. It's, you know, the stain of this so-called problem in the family will follow you for generations.
So when you're going to try and film this process of trying to figure out who is worthy to get out, who's genuinely a victim, who genuinely needs help, who's genuinely in crisis, how are you managing to film? You've got iPhones and GoPros?
Yeah, when we're shooting outside, it's mostly with iPhones and GoPros. And GoPros hidden, and me with an iPhone, because I was I just posed as a tourist everywhere, just filming everything, you know, stupid American tourist.
Right, Russia, woo.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we literally, when our clandestine work was never discovered, which was good.
What would you have done?
We had plans, right? So I had two phones. One phone, and they're both burner phones, you know, they're just for this trip only. And one phone I filled up with all my tourism information. You know, I did all that tourism stuff. I had, you know, ticket stubs in my pocket from museums and whatnot. And the other phone is what I was capturing the film on. So, and I was never known to be connected with anybody who was making the journey. The plan was to just reveal the second phone. And in fact, that's what I did the one time that we were stopped. The security folks really were surprised that there was an American in Chechnya. It just didn't make any sense to them. So they brought me in and they looked through my telephone, the one that was filled up with things for their eyes only, and ultimately believed that I was just a wacky rich American who needed to continue leaving their region. So they put me back in the car. You know, it was only 15 minutes or so. It's really, it would be too much to call it a detention, but it could have gone the other direction. And luckily it didn't.
Coming up after a short break, David France talks about the deepfake technology he used to hide his subjects' identities. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to director David France. His new documentary, Welcome to Chechnya, is now on HBO and HBO Max. The film shows the clandestine networks of activists and organizations that help people escape autocratic, deeply homophobic Chechnya and find new homes in other countries. Naturally, these people must keep their identities secret as they try to escape a brutal regime that has targeted and killed people like them. Let me move on to the part of this process where you are disguising people. Obviously, it's necessary because these people are in danger, these people who are coming out of Chechnya. And one of the main characters, of course, is a person who ultimately does reveal his identity and isn't even Chechen. He's Russian, but he went to Chechnya and is gay and got caught up and tortured and brutalized. But other than that individual, and earlier in the film, you actually do disguise that individual. This is a technique that, did you develop it for this film?
You know, big Hollywood films have used a version of this, but what we created is a automated way to do it.
Do you just sort of run film through there and it, or tape through there or digital pixels through there, and in real time it's tweaking the looks of the person you're talking to?
That is true. It very progressively maps the one face onto the other. We didn't do it in our studio. We did it in a special studio we set up in Los Angeles. And we wanted to make sure in this that we made a little bit of a tell on each one of those faces so that that you would know that they were actually wearing somebody else's face. We wanted to be very transparent about this, that this was a digitally altered face, so that I wanted the audience not to worry about the exposure that they were getting by having been in the film. I wanted you to feel comfortable knowing that they were protected.
Is this something where, if they, you know, the actual face of the person is on your drive or whatever you've got, however you're storing this, and you have to get that out of Russia, right? That's dangerous.
Yeah, we did that through encryption. You know, we just doubly encrypted our drives. We had multiple copies of our drives. We gave them to people who had no idea what was on the drives or had the key for the encryption, and traveled it across borders that way. It's not legal to encrypt drives in Russia. It's against the law. And that's why we had other people do it, because they were just carrying somebody else's, you know, materials. And they could, they would just say that they were doing a favor. They knew what they were being asked to do.
Right, but they had deniability.
That risk was very low, and they could just give up the drive, because we knew that having relinquished the drive, it would be impossible for anybody to get into it.
You also have footage that was intercepted of terrible things happening in Chechnya, unbearable to watch, and you decided to include those.
Mm, yes. Yes, that footage was intercepted by the activists themselves. It depicts the very crimes that we're talking about, and they were shot by the people who are committing those crimes. The reason they're important is because every time that they've been confronted about this, the Chechen authorities say it's not happening. There is no evidence of it happening. No one has come forward to talk about it happening, except the case of Maxim Lapunov. The truth is that other people are too frightened to come forward. They know that their family members would be put under intense police pressure to silence them if they came forward. And so the fact that they were shooting their own evidence seemed very important to me, and that's why I wanted to put it in the film, to turn it back against them, this footage that they had been juggling and sharing on their WhatsApp networks.
Now, I'm wondering, your last film about the activist Marsha P. Johnson was a Netflix project. You didn't go into this with a distributor. This one ended up with HBO. My colleagues at The Hollywood Reporter have just run a story about very challenging docs that are disappearing off of certain streaming services. And we know that Brian Fogel, who won the Oscar for his film Icarus, hasn't found a distributor for what has been a very well received by those who have seen it documentary about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Do you think Netflix wasn't involved in this for a reason, or how did that go?
As I said, we were doing this in total secrecy. Like, even our funders were sworn to secrecy. And we did show it to a number of people. And it was our conversation with HBO that made us believe that that was going to be our perfect partner for carrying the film out.
But you didn't get the sense that somebody wanted to avoid it because Putin.
No, I didn't. And I know that the report that you're talking about says that, I was very close to a deal with Netflix, which was never the case. And, you know, it was my decision to go to HBO ultimately. And we had other expressions of interest, but that was where I thought was going to be the best home for this. You know, the HBO has this intense tradition of really politically powerful and sometimes dangerous films. And I wanted a partner with me like that as we were going to Sundance to help roll this film out in the way that only they really know how to do a film like this.
Hmm. Now, the person whose identity you revealed, who is the one person to come forward.
Maxim Lapunov.
Yes. I mean, I must say, watching the film, your anxiety for him and his, I guess it's his husband, is really, it's very gripping and powerful what happens with him and his family and what he has to go through. He's living, I don't know if it's known where he's living now. He's the one who, he actually traveled back and accused publicly, and you reveal his face. Where is he and how is he?
He is in an undisclosed location, in an undisclosed part of Europe. And he is, you know, still very much in danger where he is. And that has, a terrible weight. I talk to him very frequently. I talk to their family very frequently. And he and they know that the reason they're doing what they're doing and that they're sacrificing the way they have has the potential of making a great difference. And that's why they're doing it. So they ache for the decisions that they've made, but they know that it was the right decision and they have no regret for it. So I'm just really impressed at their kind of activist spirit of that entire family.
Tremendous courage, yes. Well, I hope that this film has an impact. I don't know if you've had a sense that it will. I mean, there's talk in about how this issue has fallen off the radar with so much going on in the world. But do you think this film, do you see any change? This, you know, the Chechen leader, Ramzan Kadyrov, just is not a guy who seems to be looking inward at all ever.
Yeah. Well, the film needs to do a couple of things, hopefully. And it is doing those things. It needs to reawaken conversations between activists and foreign governments that can actually continue to offer exceptional visas to people who are fleeing the Kadyrov regime.
Which the Trump administration hasn't done at all, yeah.
Correct, nor has the Johnson administration
in Britain. Yeah.
Britain. So there are many failures from the West on this. So we're doing screening for the House of Representatives. We're doing screenings for the UN. We're doing screenings for the British Parliament, screenings at embassies throughout Russia and consular offices there. And the second thing is that the people who are doing the work are still doing the work. It's very expensive work. They hope that this film is going to help them raise money from people who see the film. And hopefully a documentary film like this is more than just cinema. Hopefully it has an impact on the ground to bring a real movement for justice.
David France is the director of Welcome to Chechnya, now available on HBO. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker and Kevin Tidmarsh produced and edited today's program with help from Mario Diaz. Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.